Good morning and welcome to the April 1st, 2019 meeting of the Chelan County PUD Commission. No April Fool's jokes today, everyone, okay? So I'd like to thank everyone for coming in and remind you that if you have any electronic devices with you today, if you'd please take the opportunity now to silence them. Today's meeting is both a study and a business session starting this morning at 10 o'clock. Is the morning study session. Business session will be starting after lunch at 1 o'clock. We welcome public input, and I see we do have members of the public here this morning, and remind you that if you would like to address any of the comments in the agenda today, this is a recorded message, or meeting, pardon me, so that we ask that you would come to the microphone up here on this desk, state your name and your address for the record, and please, if you would be so kind as to limit your comments to 3 minutes. Today we have four commissioners present. Commissioner Congdon is on the phone joining us, and Commissioner Smith has been excused. Sitting in for General Manager Steve Wright today is Mike Coleman, Director of Telecommunications, and we have with us Eric Walquist, General Counsel, and we also have Lisa Sanders as Acting Clerk of the Board. So, without further ado, if you would please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance in a safety minute led by Lance Keller.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Lance Keller. I'm a senior fisheries biologist here at the district, and the topic I will be discussing this morning is distracted driving. April is actually Distracted Driving Awareness Month. So I'm going to go through what distracted driving actually is, and then some statistics that were somewhat alarming to me, but kind of woke me up, and maybe think about things I do behind the wheel when I'm driving my own personal vehicle. Distracting driving is any activity that could divert a person's attention away from the primary task of driving. So all distractions endanger the driver, passenger, and bystander safety when you are behind the wheel of a motor vehicle. Distracted driving includes texting, using a cell phone or a smartphone, eating and drinking, talking to your passengers, grooming, reading, including maps, attempting to use a navigation system, watching a video, or even adjusting the radio. But because, you know, out of those lists, texting's at the top, and it's there because text messaging requires visual, manual, and cognitive attention for the driver and pulls, you know, your attention away from the roadway and multiple kind of avenues of the attention it takes to drive a vehicle. And the best way to end distracted driving is to educate essentially all Americans about the danger it poses, and below are some facts and statistics that hopefully make people think twice about what they do behind the wheel. I believe these are 2013 numbers. 3,477 people were killed, and 391,000 folks were injured in motor vehicle crashes that involved distracted drivers. This one is pretty interesting. I can only guess that it's gone up. As of December 2013, 153.3 billion text messages were sent in the U.S. every month. So we're all really relying on our phones, and I can only guess that has increased. 10% of drivers of all ages under the age of 20 involved in a fatal crash were reported as distracted at the time of the crash. This age group also has the largest proportion of drivers who were distracted in general. Drivers in their 20s make up 27% of the distracted drivers in fatal crashes. At any given daylight moment across America, approximately 660,000 drivers are using their cell phones. Pretty high number. Engaging in the visual and manual subtasks, such as reading a phone or dialing or attempting to text, associated with the use of a handheld phone and other portable devices, increases the risk of getting into a crash by 3 times. This next one was pretty interesting to me and kind of puts things in perspective and how much you miss when you do decide to check your phone out or adjust the radio or whatnot. 5 seconds is the average time your eyes are off the road when you're texting. But if you're traveling 55 miles an hour, you've essentially covered the length of a football field blindfolded by looking down at your phone in that time frame. And and kind of contrary to popular belief, headset cell phone use is not substantially safer than handheld cell phone use. And a quarter of teens respond to a text messages once or more every time they drive. 20% of teens and 10% of parents admit that they have extended multi-messaging text conversations while driving. So that's all the facts and information I had revolving around distracted driving. I'd take any questions at this moment. I think one thing that's really interesting is the facts, especially about the time you miss when you actually look at the phone. And you think it's very brief, but depending on the speed you're going, you could be missing out on a lot of things going on around you. So I'd entertain any questions at this moment.
No, just a comment coming back from Seattle Cancer Care on Friday. There was a young lady in front of us in a nice car who was obviously involved with her phone, and she consumed both of the lanes shoulder to shoulder. You know, so you're just kind of waiting for that moment that you can maybe escape and not become embroiled in what's going to happen at some point. But your point is so well taken.
I think we all have stories of seeing other fellow drivers going down the highway distracted. My favorite happened before there were cell phones invented, and it was a gal putting lipstick on while she's driving down the I-90 in Spokane in the midst of heavy traffic. Unfortunately, she wasn't paying attention, and she hit the Jersey barrier right in front of me.
Oh my.
And her bumper came off and hit my car. So there's been a lot of distraction over the years, and it wasn't all cell phones, but it's taken a new height. I think those numbers point to a significant increase of distraction.
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah. It's easier to be distracted behind the wheel now more than it was, say, 20 years ago.
Absolutely.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Thanks, Lance.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Appreciate it. Good presentation. So, commissioners, we have an agenda in front of us. Items on the consent agenda are subject to transfer to the regular agenda upon the request of any commission member. Do I hear any such requests or additions to the agenda?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we move item 9 to the consent agenda.
Is there a second?
Second.
Been moved and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Those opposed, say nay. Aye. That was an aye, Ann. Thank you. The ayes have it. So we'll move on to the agenda. Mike, would you like to take it from here?
Absolutely. Agenda item number 3 is the legislative update, and Tracy Yunt, Sean Seaman will be providing us an update on where we are in the legislative session.
Good morning, Commissioners. Tracy Yunt, Director of External Affairs.
And Sean Seaman with External Affairs.
So we're going to hit the top 5 today. There's a lot of stuff going on, as you might imagine, but we only have 2 hours to present to you.
Thank you.
So we'll keep it to 5.
April Fools.
No, not supposed to have any of those.
That's right.
Okay, we're going to cover cap and trade, clean energy standard, low carbon fuel standard, some telecom issues, and bid limits. So first, this cap and trade, just in case you hear about it, is a lower likelihood that it's going to proceed this legislative session. It's an economy-wide market-based approach to address greenhouse gases, and it's in the Senate Energy, Environment, and Technology Committee. The main issue is the clean energy standard, which we will talk about next, is proceeding with a lot of momentum, and it is going to be a complex program. So our concern would be is if the clean energy standard does proceed, and if momentum was increased around the cap and trade program, you would have two programs, very complex programs, that have a good chance of interacting in intended and unintended ways. So our message has been, or will continue to be, that if the clean energy standard does progress, that we would urge folks to consider a phased approach, so to speak, with the cap and trade program looking at next year. cap and trade program will be economy wide, not just the energy sector like the clean energy standard, but how they interact will be a challenge, especially when we get into things like rulemaking. So complicated, and we still don't know how they'll fully work with each other. The second, like I was mentioning, is the clean energy standard. This is moving the state of Washington to 100% clean energy, and it's awaiting executive action in the House Finance Committee. There are still outstanding issues that we are directly engaged in. One is we know the river fluctuates from year to year, the amount of runoff and the compliance requirements that are established in the clean energy standard could be or will be impacted by what that runoff looks like. How much water comes down? How much can we produce in energy? What do we serve our customers? And so what we're trying to work through is a reasonable mechanism in the legislation that would recognize the hydro variability year after year. So that work is moving ahead. There's also a subject on investor-owned utilities' interest to protect facilities that they build in response to the clean energy standard from being condemned by either existing public utilities or the creation of new public utilities. And so very complicated topic. We do see that there's progress, and we hope that that issue can be resolved. And there are several utilities working on that condemnation language.
Yeah, I think it's important to note that that hits right at the very base of RCW 54 and the public's right to govern its own utilities in the state. I mean, that's a critical, critical issue.
Right, and there's a lot of, as you know, history around this subject that the IOUs, investor-owned utilities, have been interested to try to address for years. We're hoping that their long-standing issues don't get conflated or integrated with this clean energy standard, what they're trying to protect here. There are some things that probably make sense for them to be concerned about relative to the clean energy standard. There are other condemnation issues that are much broader in scope. So we hope we can keep those separated. Finally, this is a large financial implication, but even more importantly, I would say, is equality or parity between renewable resources. If wind and solar are going to be treated in a certain way, either financially or regulatorily, we believe the same should be said for hydropower. We've mentioned this before. We continue to work on this subject, trying to ensure that both from a regulatory perspective or a tax incentive perspective, that whatever the legislature is trying to achieve, either GHG reductions or reliability or whatever, that hydropower is treated on par. So this, quite frankly, is becoming a higher bar to clear. It's becoming a real challenge, but we're not giving up. But all three of these items, the hydro variability, condemnation, and the tax parity, we believe have to be appropriately addressed before we would move into a position of recommending supporting the bill.
So the low carbon fuel standard mainly applies to transportation is the impetus behind this. And this is a bill been sponsored by Representative Joe Fitzgibbons. And for utilities, it would provide opportunity by creating a credit market, and we could participate in that market through the installation of electric vehicle infrastructure, for instance. But it also has some limitations to that, and some of those programs would be developed in coordination with Commerce. So with all that aside, this bill is running into some opposition. It's now in the Senate committee right now, and that's Senator Hobbs' committee, who has a competing low-carbon or a carbon fuel bill out there and other transportation bills that would be used to fund transportation programs. And as Tracy has mentioned, I think in previous meetings, there was an agreement back in 2015, a comprehensive transportation program, and many senators and Congress or representatives feel that this low-carbon fuel standard bill is in conflict with that. So it may not even move out of the Senate committee at this time and could become part of the interim discussions including what Senator Hobson wants to do and Representative Fitzgibbon. So at this point, we'll know more this week because this is closely coming to some policy cutoff dates. Again, this, though, would likely be necessary to implement the budget, which means it could be in play to the end of the session. The moving on, changing subjects now off carbon into broadband issues. We have the two bills. These are companion bills. These are the governor's bill of 1498-5511 that Chelan PD and Waputo have been heavily engaged in. What's interesting in this bill, we're going to focus on the safe harbor from our perspective, is that the Senate bill came out with a safe harbor language that we liked for 11 months, a total of 12 months and 11 months in one particular paragraph. And the House converted it back to their version of 6 months. And the House bill came over with 6 months, and the Senate made that 12 months into that. So they're going back and forth right now in this situation, and this is going to have to become a conference process to settle these two out. They're both moving forward. They both seem to be advancing, but they're going back and forth. And we hope that this case of the Senate is able to prevail and get the total of 12 months for safe harbor.
Yeah. Let me ask a question, and Mike, I'd like to ask it of you. Safe harbor, is it even feasible to find safe harbor in 6 months?
The answer is probably not, yeah. And I testified to that to Senator Hudgens' committee. One of the lessons we learned in attempting to get other ISPs on the network, it's not an easy decision for them. And then once you get past the decision making, which could take anywhere from 3 to 6 months, you've still got to go through the technical alignment between the two networks, and they have decisions to make on their side. They also have some rather demanding decisions to make from a customer service perspective. And that was essentially what I outlined to Senator Hudgens' committee, is that it was a complex process. It did need adequate time. He acknowledged that in the hearing, but the House has stuck with the six-month limit for the time being.
Thank you.
So thank you, Mike. It is interesting why there is such a discrepancy between the House and Senate, and there are some strong beliefs in the House from what we've been able to gather, is that they're concerned having a longer time period is just more of a means towards retail authority, and we've made it real clear there's no desire. Waputo is not pushing for retail authority, but it still becomes a point of contention for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. The other aspect that Waputo was following had to do with review of applications. The original bill had some UTC review and provide recommendations. The Senate bill was changed to have an expert panel. The House bill had the UTC language, and there's an effort to try and soften up that language in the UTC to make it just a technical review. And neither one of our changes made it through. They were talked about with Representative Hudgens, but they hadn't shown up yet. It doesn't mean that they might not still show up. So we have hope that the two changes we're seeking in the House will come forward, and then we would be fine with the bill as it comes out. The balance of the bill looks good. Everybody likes it. The funding levels, the speeds, et cetera, it's just these issues for the public utilities. The bid limits bill, again, this is a little bit of a misnomer. The bid limits would just raise thresholds on different purchasing and contract levels to higher levels. Most of it's based on increasing the 2008 levels based on inflation to higher levels. As you recall, we had a standalone bill. This was 5418. It's an omnibus bill that rolled a lot of different local governments into this. And it's currently been changed to provide interim thresholds just for a couple of years while they perform a study. And the PUDs have basically said, well, perhaps it's the best we can do. Let's get behind at least getting the limits changed for a couple years while the study goes forward, because part of the study is to look at, could we have inflationary increases as opposed to coming back to the legislature every few years to get changes. So it seems to be moving, but we want to get one of the dates changed. And right now, these values would sunset in March, and we'd like to at least see these interim values sunset based on a budget year towards, so go to the end of the year.
So that's our top five.
Sean, go back to the sunset. I didn't catch that. So what do you explain that to me a little
bit. So there, the bill would make these changes, would allow some increases in these thresholds
right.
and some other language, but this whole bill would sunset and end in March of 2021.
Oh.
While this study goes on, and after that study, then you'd have to come back. I think the hope is that the study would be done, and by March, in that legislative session, you can make some changes. But if not, then we would have these thresholds changing in the first quarter of our budget year, another budget year. So that's a concern.
Thank you.
Any questions?
Okay. Good presentation.
Thanks.
Won't be today. It just won't be today.
Okay, the next item up, item number four, is a quarterly electrical load growth update. Andy Wendell and Chad Rissman.
Welcome, gentlemen.
Good morning. Good morning. Wanted to bring any changes back about monitoring load growth in the county, some new loads that we are, some new applications that we're monitoring. Also, today is April 1st, which is cryptocurrency new rates applications process. So a number of things going on today. Rendering on the front slide here of Hilton Garden, but you can actually drive by it now and see that it's actually up. So
yeah,
growth occurring in the county. So load forecast update overview of active projects of note. Mobile substation, we want to talk a little bit about a preview to a resolution that we would like to bring for board consideration next time on April 15th to purchase not just one but two mobile substations. So we want to talk through that a little bit. And some Q2 action items. Last time we did the load update back in December. We provided the photo that's on the left there in November of 2018, which is the Port District construction the facility there that they're building in Kashmir. And wanted to provide an update on that. So again, things are progressing and new facilities and buildings are going in. The 10-year load forecast has not changed from the December timeframe. So even though we saw a longer winter and our energy consumptions were higher than what we've seen in a long time, we don't anticipate that the load growth has changed beyond what we were forecasting it changed to in December. So the load forecast group has not changed their forecast. Just want to note again that forecast back in September of 2018 was the base case was 77 average megawatts energy increase over a 10-year period, so 7.7 megawatts per year for a 10-year period. That was reduced in December down to 48 average megawatts, and that is all due to a reduction in what the forecasting group is anticipating from the cryptocurrency and HDL loads.
So in the past, we've shown you some of the more active projects or current projects in our spectrum. The 12 on the top there, we've seen those in a previous presentation. You can see that there's a mix of both new residential, multi-family housing, residential developments, and a fair amount of hotels and other commercial and industrial commerce. And it's spread across the county. It's pretty consistent with what we're seeing. Interesting enough, the dozen or so on the bottom are applications that we've received since January 1st. So these are new applications. Again, a wide spectrum of commerce, including multifamily housing developments and some commercial and industrial growth. The applications on the bottom, we're working through those at peak loading. They consist of about 5.5 megawatts, so there's some large loads in there. As Chad mentioned today, there's the lifting of the moratorium and the new cryptocurrency rates go into place. Aside from a few April 1st, jokes, we haven't received any formal applications that I'm aware of. So,
Andy, before you can go back to that just for a second, I just want to point out, and certainly for those listening today, but perhaps not here, the stark difference in terms of projects, the cryptocurrency expansion in Kashmir, slated with 2 megawatts, and you go down 2 more units, and you can see there's a 311-unit apartment building in Leavenworth that is only going to be using 0.9 megawatts. For me, that was just a stark reality of what we were facing with the cryptocurrency issues that ran at us last year.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just, I would point out the cryptocurrency that you're referring to in Kashmir for the 2 megawatts was previously under contract, so it wasn't a surprise to us. We knew that was happening.
Right. Yeah. That was before the moratorium.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the amount of power is really what kind of hit me between the running lights. Is that we've got a 311-unit apartment complex that's using less than a third or a half of what that one business was going to use.
Yeah, and that half is representative of a peak loading, which would be likely the coldest day of the year, and that. So right. We would anticipate the annual average being less
half
than a half.
Megawatt.
Yeah.
Half or less of that.
Yeah, yeah, that's a huge difference.
So just to finalize on this slide, you know, this is consistent with what we've seen in the rearview mirror as well as the windshield. We anticipate more applications as the weather has broke for more developments and more housing and more commercial industrial commerce going on.
Yeah.
That just rolls into that kind of that geographic view the applications that we just discussed are relatively consistent with our forecast for the 3 to 5 year vision in Leavenworth and Chelan and Kashmir, as well as the Wenatchee area. So we are keeping a really close eye on the cryptocurrency applications as we've lifted the moratorium, and we will report back if we see any material changes from what we've forecasted in that as well.
So shifting gears slightly, but connected to it, mobile substation, wanted to get this in front of you. We have had in our work plan to replace one of our mobile substations that's been damaged and inoperable. We would use it potentially in emergency situations, but we had in our work plan for 2020 to replace it. So as we pulled that up and started working on the project, we went through an alternatives analysis, started looking at our maintenance schedules, and we recognized that staff wants to propose that we not only purchase one, but we purchase two. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the benefits and the impacts that would have on the budget. So what we would be bringing specifically to the board for consideration would be the authorization to advertise for the two, which was originally planned for just the one. So the resolution to advertise would be for two mobiles, 25 megawatts per mobile. The new mobiles would replace two existing units that are at the end of life. So one of them is small and 1950s vintage. We've rewound it and put some work into it, but it's not large enough to be used in all of our substations, only about a third of our substations. Then it has further limitations because of its capabilities. The other one, as I said, is damaged. So we have three mobiles, but one of them is a half a mobile, I guess, and the other one is damaged. So when we look at the importance asset management, when we're working through asset management, we went through a criticality analysis of all of the major components within the distribution system, and we identified that the power transformers are our number one most critical device. Each one of those, on average, is responsible for providing service to about 2,000 electric meters. So it's very critical from a reliability standpoint. The other side of that is we do not carry spares. So we don't carry spares of our power transformers. It takes a long time to pull out the old one and put in the new one. So spares doesn't provide us a ton of advantage, although better than not having there. We've decided the strategy we're going to use is a mobile. The mobile can be brought in. Our standard says that we want to design it such that we can bring it in within a 24-hour period and restore service if we can't transfer those loads off. So it's the contingency importance of our mobiles. We're also, because of the loading of our substations, our load is growing, and our substations are loaded higher. We have less ability to transfer the existing customers off onto adjacent stations. Our system's also radial, too, so that makes it challenging. So we rely a lot on our mobile substations to perform maintenance. We can't take those substations out of service without an impact to our customers' reliability and service. So we're bringing in these mobiles to perform life-extending maintenance on the power transformers, and we're using the mobile for that. So we're deferring 2 to 3 station maintenances a year, and that's mainly due to which mobile we can put into one spot. We would like to be able to perform maintenance with 2 mobiles and 2 crews performing maintenance through the year, and then having a mobile as a backup in case something went wrong. In the winter times, we would store at least 2 of those mobiles so that they would be ready to go at a moment's notice. The winter time is important because that's when we peak. Impacts to budget. So right now in our budget forecast, in our work plan forecast, in 2020 is $3.5 million for the one unit. So that was established several years ago. It's high. So we have more in the forecast now. It's not budgeted. 2020 is not budgeted yet nor been approved. But because we would commit to a contract, we would be requesting the board, in addition to the resolution for advertising, also requesting authorization for the budget. So we believe that the total project costs, each one of these mobile substations is, we think, somewhere not exceeding $2 million. That's about where the engineer's estimate will be. And there's additional things and work that we would need to do, some contracts, some commission testing. There's several things that are included in the total project. So the total project cost for 2 mobile substations, we expect to be somewhere around $5.2 million, which is $1.7 million more than the $3.5. Again, a little bit of the benefits here: provide capacity for maintenance support of these critical assets. We're able to perform the life-extending maintenance practices to each one of these power transformers. We're replacing anything when we go out and perform maintenance between 5 to 8 years, depending on the condition of the unit. We're typically finding things that do not pass a test, and we're replacing those things and making updates and improvements. We talked a little bit about the contingency options and where load transfers are not an option, that are mobile. We have to rely on that in order to maintain service. And then critical for supporting planned substation refurbishments.
Is 3 enough?
We believe so.
Think 3 is enough?
Yeah, we believe so. Okay. Thanks for asking. As Andy mentioned, today is an important day from the cryptocurrency standpoint. Accepting new applications, staff has built an application process that takes new processes into consideration, incorporating the new policies. We're continuing to work on our substation siting efforts. We've talked about that, brought those to the boards quite a bit. Progress on active customer list. Andy talked about those a little bit. We're monitoring applications. So we maintain this watch list. We maintain a what we think is going to happen. We maintain a watch list of we haven't received an application, but here's some specifics that we're hearing word of mouth. And then we're looking at what actually gets applied for and what gets connected. So we're trying to reconcile all of those things. That's why there's typically a bit of a delay in what we think the forecast is. We're not responding immediately to new applications. We're thinking that those are incorporated into the overall forecast. So reconciling those becomes a bit of an effort.
So that's a forecast.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. And then again, the mobile substation, these numbers are a little bit different. I was trying to represent here that the actual cost of the units is about $2 million. So what we'd be requesting from the board is authorizing staff to advertise for the bids to purchase the equipment. And then there's also some additional costs that would be included in the budget for commission testing and things that are outside the contract. So contract would be about for $4 million or so.
I have a question. Oh. Chad, is my rec, I don't know, it seems to me at some point as we looked at substation sites, we were talking about actually doubling up in some of the more difficult sites to get in and out of, to rotate those back and forth. Am I recalling this correctly? So I guess my question is, as we put in a substation and we double that up, what's the cost comparison versus a mobile setup?
They're similar. They would be similar, about the same amount of equipment is being used. The mobile substation has got a little bit different design. It's a less of a life in it, but they're very similar, mm-hmm. and the costs are very similar. So the difference is that it would be the station capacity would be available and potentially online for an almost immediate transfer. Mm-hmm. So I think what you're recalling there is when we were talking about North Shore Chelan specifically, we had some choices there, and we still have some choices where the property would allow us to put two transformers in there. If we decided that we would limit the loading to one transformer, then the one that was permanently in there would become sort of a spare, an online mm-hmm. spare. So that would be a choice, an operating choice. Or and we would do that if we determined that the access was not conducive to the mobile substation. So that's when we were bringing that up. But potentially we could double bank or put two transformers in there, but only load it up 50%, right, so that we could perform maintenance without bringing the mobile in. Our standard is actually to build a double bank station to load it, to load that station up to what full capability is. And then for maintenance and contingency to bring in the mobile.
Okay.
That's our typical and our standard, but property and access sometimes doesn't allow us to follow our standard as much as we would like. Does that answer your question? Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Good.
Okay.
Good report. Thank Thanks, guys. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And next we have item number 5, the Service Center Outreach Update. Dan Frazier and David Lodge are going to update us on everything that was heard through the public meetings. No action requested, but they will also use this as preparation for a resolution on April 15th to approve the recommended consolidation plan and adopt the project budget. So,
thank you, Mike. Commission, Dan Frazier, Director of Shared Services.
David Lodge, Project Manager, Engineering and Project Management.
So we're back, as we said on, I believe it was February 19th, we were here. It's kicking off our outreach program. We gave an update on the work done, the feasibility done to date. And we have been out in the community the last 6 weeks. Probably tired of hearing of us, some people are. But we did spend quite a bit of time previewing this this outreach effort. Several of us on the team went to city council meetings and community meetings with community groups, service organizations, and others to preview what we were trying to get people to come to, which was our series of open house meetings. So we had those open house meetings, one in each community. Very well attendance, well attended some, others kind of more typical of a public meeting that we had a few very interested people, but not a huge turnout. And we also, as part of this, did an employee open house. We want to make sure our employees stay up on this project, and it affects everybody quite a bit. And we didn't want to be out in the community and have our employees hearing things about the project in the news. So it was really good to open that discussion with our employees. So what they got to see was some additional design concepts about the space inside the building, where the public meetings were more about the exterior and the site and those kind of things.
So we captured comments formally through a survey, and we received 791 survey responses. The majority of those were online surveys, and we also received comment cards through our open houses, through our lobby, and through the different meetings that we attended to present. You can see the breakdown: 720 were English, 71 were Spanish, and I do want to draw your attention to 86 of those were actually lobby interviews. So we really wanted to hear from our customer owners who use our services regularly and went to our lobby on a couple different occasions and interviewed folks coming in the door to ask them how this might affect them. So we encouraged participation in the survey by offering an iPad to a drawing winner, and we did that drawing on Friday, and I'm pleased to announce the winner is Janet and Charlie Chamberlain. So they'll be getting their, we called them on Friday, and they'll be getting their iPad shortly. So now, what did we learn from this survey? So of the people that filled out the survey, you can see that the majority of them don't visit our office very often, almost never. But we had a number that were monthly visitors, and you can see a breakdown on that between Spanish and English survey responses. So we asked, why do they visit our office? And of the people who visit somewhat regularly, vast majority was paying bills. So this gives some context to the users of our services that filled out the survey. And then finally, we asked, how would our proposed service center affect you? The majority of responses said no impact, or were supportive of the idea, like the better customer service and the location. But we did hear a number of concerns, and that's what I really want to dive into in this presentation and talk about the concerns we heard. So I'll give you a quick summary here, and we'll also give commissioners all of the survey results. So not just what I'm telling you now, but you'll be able to see everything that we received from the survey. So some of the concerns were traffic related. What does it do to traffic on the north end of town? Concerns about impacts to Riverside Playhouse. We have a great relationship with Riverside Playhouse today. And shared parking. And so what does that look like in the future if the PUD were to move off the site? Increased travel time. So of our lobby surveys, a number of our customer owners travel by bus or other means, and going to the north end means increased travel time. And the cost of the proposal. And how does that affect rates? Impact to downtown businesses. And then a very small minority just don't support moving administration. So we're going to talk a little bit about those in more detail.
So the rest of these slides are really about customer feedback in both the written form and online, and also the interaction that we had with our customers at these open house events. There was some regionality to the comments. And the Wenatchee open house, we did hear quite a bit about the impacts to downtown businesses and the Riverside Playhouse, and I don't think we're surprised about that. It's one of the reasons the PUD has been engaging in this effort. David's going to go into a little more depth, but effort with the port and with the city of Wenatchee to really look at the future of this site and make sure it doesn't provide a negative impact if we do end up leaving. Cashmere, Leavenworth, and really Chelan and Eniat, all of them are very pleased with the concept of getting out of kind of the core of downtown and improving access for them to access our services here, and also the idea that our crews would be closer to them in an event of an emergency or even just regular customer service interactions, being not stuck kind of down in the core of town. And there was several people that, after we walked them through the business case, they said, wow, this just makes sense. Others have done it. I think we've seen the DOT just kind of eventually completed their consolidation in the same general vicinity. A lot of people really understood that regional service providers work better if they're central to their region they serve. So we did get a lot of those kind of comments.
So to sum up, some of the different questions that we heard through the surveys and also the discussions we had at the open houses. One of the questions was about being able to take the bus to the new service center. We do have a lot of customers who use our services at this location and travel here by bus. There is a Link stop that's a couple blocks away on Penny Road, but we're planning to work with Link to see if we can get something close to the new service center that our customer owners can use, and as well as our employees. Question was, do we have room to expand at this site? After all, one of the major drivers of this project is we're out of space on this campus. But this is a generational decision, and we are looking at the site and master planning of how we would grow in the future, and it does accommodate future growth. And would the PUD be able to leave a payment center downtown? Well, there's nothing in our proposal specific to a downtown payment center. In our customer information system project, as that gets implemented, it'll open up new tools that aren't available to us today for different payment options. And so that may offer a solution in the near future.
So you saw in the survey results, there was a couple questions about how this impacts rates. And at some of the public meetings, those questions were posed directly. And in looking at the business case and how this business case was developed, our base case ended up being a larger cost over the 50-year period than what we're proposing. So in terms of what this means for rates, it actually has less rate pressure than continuing on the path that we're on. So the status quo, if you recall, had a lower initial cost, but a much higher present cost over the 50-year period. And so the way we term this is what causes rates to go up? It's rate pressures. And facilities, it is a rate pressure, but this alternative actually provides the lower rate pressure than any other option that we studied. So in terms of what does it mean for rates, it's actually a positive. It provides some stability and some good rate-focused decision-making. Will there be adequate access to PUD services? This is actually the cornerstone of the three prongs that we talked about throughout our outreach, which is improve customer service, both in providing that service coming to the PUD and providing that service out to our customers. The other being the financial benefits, and the third being safety. So yes, it absolutely provides better access to services. And the one-stop shop concept, we don't have that here, right? We our customers come here and they have to choose one of four doors pretty much to come in and avail themselves to our service. So the ability to provide a one-stop shop is very important. Will the PUD be evaluating traffic impacts on North Wenatchee Avenue? And this is one that came up. Commissioner Arsenault and I had the conversation with some locals on this very issue, and the concept of, are you trading a benefit to the PUD to a detriment to the region transportation system? And we don't think we are. We think there are a lot of trade-offs that are going to happen in terms of netting out trips. Right now, our trucks are congesting North Wenatchee Avenue every morning and every afternoon, leaving down here to go to the majority of our roles are north. So we'll be taking that away. Will we add to that? Absolutely. Employees that live in the city will then be part of the commute going out, but it's somewhat of a reverse commute. They'll be going out in the morning and coming back in the afternoon. Our one area of concern is really that PM peak that comes back into the city that we're concerned about. So we've engaged with the city of Wenatchee already, and we have a traffic engineering firm we're working with, and we'll look at, see what those impacts are and how we would mitigate them, but it's definitely on our radar.
And finally, will PUD leaving Fifth Street affect downtown businesses and Riverside Playhouse? So there's a lot to this. I'm going to spend a little bit of time here. So we know that this would have a big impact on the community should the PUD leave downtown. And so we've already begun a partnership with the city and the port to do a redevelopment plan of this campus. What could go here if the PUD leaves? And how does that get started early in the process so that there's not a long gap? But through this outreach, we heard a big support for Music Theater of Wenatchee and how we will address the parking. So today we share our parking lot, and it works great because they use the parking lot when we're not here, and we use the parking lot when they're not here. And if the PUD left without a plan, that could be detrimental to Riverside Playhouse and Music Theater of Wenatchee. So we actually invited some board members from Music Theater to be able to speak directly to you about their concerns. And this is one of the areas that we want to address as part of the redevelopment plan. And then same thing with the downtown businesses. What is the effect on downtown businesses? And our proposal is to move forward with the redevelopment plan and take action on that plan to try to eliminate the amount of time between when the PUD would move and some redevelopment occurring. Okay, in our survey and also in all of our discussions, we asked for ideas. What are some ideas for a new service center? And this was the fun part. People had some great ideas. And we've summarized some of the ones we heard repeatedly from a lot of different people. So there's a big interest in a cafe that's open to the employees and public, similar to what we have today, but maybe even more accessible to the public off of our customer lobby. A trail with the connection to the Wenatchee River for the public. A learning center for kids in the lobby, either while their parents are visiting for business or maybe as a destination. Bilingual staff in the customer service area to service all of our customer owners. Museum or display area in the lobby telling the story of the PUD, or the history of the area. More conservation demonstrations, and an auditorium or meeting space for public use.
So as we were out in the community, we were followed by the media. We also made attempts to get on the radio and bring people out to the open houses. So we worked with all of the local newspapers and had interviews on both KPQ and Coho, and actually I missed the logo, KOZI up in Chelan. As you can see this shot from the Wenatchee open house, we had quite a turnout there. It was a really good meeting. It was interesting because I've been involved in doing these public meetings for over 20 years, and this was probably the greatest turnout I've seen at a single meeting. And so it's good to be able to engage.
Did we get a final head count? That was 100 people?
It was over 100 on the sign-in. I think a lot of people didn't sign in, so our estimates were somewhere in the 100 to 150 range.
Yeah, very good turnout.
Yeah. We're also keeping the community involved informed. We're going to keep our PUD website up. This is a great, we're actually doing a little plagiarizing of another utility that's doing a process very similar to ours, and what we're looking at is how they're keeping their customer owners informed as they go through the process. So We're looking at keeping this timeline up and updating it as we go, providing the community with where we're at in the decision process, and then should we go forward, the design process, and when we would move, and all the different things that would impact our community. So we want to keep that up. We also had a PUD Facebook page presence and got quite a bit of information. There's a handout here that we'll be sending out that actually goes through the what we went through in terms of meeting with the radio stations, meeting with the print advertisers, what we published, and then it includes some of the feedback of the metrics from the Facebook page, metrics from our website hits, and it does capture some of the information that's already here on the graphs regarding how often you use our services, what you're there for. In addition, which is always helpful as we do these types of campaigns, how did you hear about this? And what was surprising there when we first saw these numbers is the number of people that really email is very effective. So we do have some mass emailing, and we use the direct mailing, but the email seems to be much more effective in getting people to respond to surveys, and it's been very good. So we'll be handing this out today. In addition, as we spoke through this process and we worked through the business case, we were putting together a summary report, and this will be available to the public and the commissioners today, and it's the project background and the summary of those comparison of alternatives that we went through. We had a lot of discussion with people on those two slides, the cash graph and the matrix on the spending on the five options. And I think it's a really good time to get this out in front of the public for one final recapture of what we did, how we characterized the different options and evaluated, and were able to hone down to the final three options, and then the refresh of the economics we did a few weeks ago, and then what is really driving toward this decision. So this is finished for today. And it includes a little more detail of the scope of work. We had a lot of questions about what did you consider here, and what part of this would be in this option. And so we did a much more detailed scope of work for each of the options so people can understand really the depth of the study that we went to. So at this point, we'd like to entertain any more comments or suggestions or feedback from the commissioners, and then open it up for the public.
Commissioners, any comments, questions?
I just appreciated the open houses. It was great to go into communities, and it was well organized by staff. I just want to let you know I appreciate those efforts. And as people came in, they were welcomed and had their questions answered. For me, it was interesting to get a feeling in the meetings that I attended, just curiosity, just what is this, and listen to their questions. I think the two questions that I probably didn't share, things that came up with me that I didn't see up there, was just people interested in the Rand House and where that fit in, and I would share with them, well, we don't own that, but people looking for the PUD for some life-saving event there. So I did get a few of those questions, but I just thought they were very well-attended meetings and good questions, and it was nice meeting with the public.
Well, it was really nice to have commissioners at all those meetings. We do at least one commissioner every meeting, which is really good for the public to know it's really important to have the commissioners there and able to answer some questions.
I know I went to the meeting at the museum, which was the day after the Wenatchee World ran the article on the Playhouse concerns mm-hmm. of parking, and heard several concerns about the Riverside Playhouse. And of course, part of that's timely because of the article just ran in the paper. But I see a great deal of collaboration in my mind. Should we choose to move forward, I don't see this as a zero-sum game. I see this as the potential. If you can open up your mind and think about the potential of what this piece of property could be in a downtown core that doesn't come available very often when you have 8 acres in downtown that suddenly can be developed into housing and a variety of other activities as well as retail, what that could bring in the way of a vibrant downtown and dollars into downtown. Now you have a great deal of people living here, not just working here. So I heard comments, people with vision at the museum making those kinds of statements. So I think there's a lot of good interaction. The transparency, the outreach to the community is so important. And we're obviously asking for and interested in what the community has to say. So having said that, I'd like to invite anyone from the public who might like to come up and make a comment.
I'm Dave Williams, president of Music Theater of Wenatchee, and we do have a few board members and members of Music Theater of Wenatchee here. Maybe you could just wave your hand when I call your name. John Mauser, Sue Lawson, Arlene Jones, Cynthia Brown, and T.J. Farrell is up here. So the Riverside Playhouse, how many of you have been to the Riverside Playhouse before? So you can see that it is a gem in our community. It's been around for almost 60 years. We purchased the playhouse from the supporters of the center in 2000. And the one concern here is the parking lot is owned by the PUD all the way up to our door. So kind of a unique situation there. But we had a handshake agreement at that time with and still do, with the PUD to park in those spaces. So we've appreciated that. And in turn, we've offered the theater so that the PUD can have meetings at the theater as need be. So. And we feel that the PUD is definitely on board with helping us out in any way they can. But, there still are concerns because and angst mm-hmm. because we're in a holding pattern. And one of the things that has come to my mind is if housing does go into this area, it could impact parking. I mean, you think about Riverside 9 and how when they built that, they didn't really put in adequate parking for that. You can see parking is spilling over into neighboring properties. So our hope is that we can somehow get a piece of this property or to purchase or whatever so that we can have some parking for our theater. But if the housing was to go in, you know that some of the tenants of those housing would park in those spots regardless, which could impact us in a big way. So that is one major concern. The other concern is, you know, we want to somehow expand at some point our facility. We're getting cramped in our facilities. And, you know, we were looking at the possibility if and when this property becomes for sale of maybe purchasing the Department of Fish and Wildlife building, which is owned by the PUD, to expand our theater. So those are some concerns. And
no, our history has been our history has been that we've partnered with people with parking lots. We were at the Benton Street for so many years. We used the parking right across the street at the Social and Health Services building because we used it in the evenings, and we had a very similar agreement. So when supporters of the center originally bought the building where we are, they set up the handshake agreement with the PUD, and then that transferred to us when we purchased from supporters of the center. And let me tell you that we would not exist without being able to have parking in the evening. Yeah. Do you have a hand up, John? Sue.
And please state your name.
Sue Lawson, when we had an arrangement with the supporters at the center, part of our lease agreement, they guaranteed us 150 parking spots at night. And when supporters of the center are suddenly relocated to next door to the convention center, and that just kind of threw us for a loop, and then they said, well, you can buy your portion of the building, and we wanted the parking to go with it. And they said, please no, because you'll clear the deal if we try to sell the land. And they said, well, the PUD wants to buy the land. I'm sure you can work out an agreement with them. And that's how that all came about. And so nothing was formalized, written down on paper. It was sort of a handshake agreement, and that's why we feel a little threatened here.
So I just want you to know that the kind of community that you want to see going forward is the kind of community Music Theater has been creating in this valley for over 50 years. And that's the thing I think we all want. Thank you.
Any questions?
Let me just say that I'm personally a very big supporter of theater. I love theater. And actually, you've just made my life a lot easier because some of the conversations I've had and concerns that I've heard is that the PUD would perhaps move forward and move out, and this area would be surrounded in barbed wire, and nobody would have any interest in any of the property or any of the buildings. By having suggested or indicated an interest in possibly not only expanding into fish and wildlife, but possibly also a parking lot, you're the first that have indicated that that's not going to happen. We're not going to have barbed wire and abandoned buildings, and we now have an interested party. So thank you, because now in my conversations with others that are concerned that nothing will ever happen should we leave here, you've just given me a potential buyer. So thank you. Appreciate that.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, and I'd just like to reiterate that there's been, I think, a long-term commitment from the PUD to the arts in the community. And philosophically, I just don't see where that's going to change. So that opens the door then to exactly what Commissioner Arden was talking about, that the opportunity to work together to be able to continue the support of the arts, regardless of what form of art that is, and to work that out. And I'd just like to compliment my long-term colleague, Sue Lawson, and her long-term commitment to, you know, theater arts. But it just is so important. And, you know, we all believe in kids, and I kind of, in some ways, hate to bring it up, but we have one of our own on Broadway who's come through this whole program.
Two of our own, actually.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, you know, Heidi getting the, you know, the most local, most recent. But you know, it's great. And if we don't continue to provide opportunity for our youth to be involved, and we all know that kids become great adults when they have the opportunity to share their talents and do that publicly. And so let's see where it goes. And we'd really like to be supportive in every way that we possibly can. Thank you.
And thank you for coming today and sharing your comments. Appreciate it.
Yeah. I also have parking lot scars from the years that I ran the auditorium at the high school as a assistant principal. And gosh darn, people had to walk all the way from Pioneer over to the high school auditorium. So we can work it out.
Yes. Any other comments? Well, thank you all for coming today. Appreciate it.
Back to Dan.
So with that, we'll be continuing to receive feedback. We won't be, the iPad deal is done. So no more iPad, but I'm sure we're going to continue to receive comments, and we will bring those back. Our plan is to come back to the next meeting on April 15th. At that, we would update any information that we have received. We have received some letters that came in from the public, that people that wanted to be here couldn't be here. Then we'd update that information and then present a resolution. And that resolution would be to make the decision to move forward and to approve the project budget. Now, the amount of money is actually in the long-term forecast, but it's not been adopted as part of the budget. The only thing in this year's budget was the acquisition of land and then the continued design work. So we would be asking for adoption of the project budget.
Okay. I do have one other piece of public comment. Tom Green was not able to be here today, and Steve had asked him to submit an email, so I would like to go ahead and read that. And Steve had apologized for not being able to, or I'm sorry, Tom had apologized for not being able to make this meeting in person. He did have the opportunity to spend a good deal of time at the Service Center open house in Kashmir and had extensive conversations with Randy Smith, the staff, and the lead architect. He says he remains very supportive of the project and was particularly struck by the ratio of investment in the power-producing plants compared to this project. And considering the number of years the new service center will support the core PUD missions, one could argue this is a modest investment in a facility that will directly and positively impact the efficiency of the much more costly operating plants. He says, I was also very impressed with the ability of the basic design to be expanded many years into the future. The architect took me through step by step and how future growth can be accommodated. It is an excellent plan in my view. And that was submitted by Tom Green.
So, thank you.
So we'll make sure that's part of the record, Commissioner.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. And one other thing I want to make sure that those that are listening today and maybe not here and didn't have a chance to see the to see your slides, is that this should the PUD choose to move forward, that any reconstruction on this location would be a collaborative effort, not just for the PUD, but it would also include the city of Wenatchee and the port of Chelan County. And I think some of the concerns that folks might have could take a little bit of solace in the fact that you've got municipal bodies that are doing the development, not for-profit developers. And so I think that might shade it just a little bit differently in the respect that anything that would be built would have to be approved by the city, the port, and the PUD. And that should help address some of the questions on parking.
So I missed a last paragraph on.
Oh, Tom's, you did. Okay,
email. Sorry about that. His last paragraph says, "I also appreciate the soft and non-industrial look of the headquarters area on the west side. I believe this was discussed at the very first meeting with the committee, and the response by your design team and leadership is very impressive, and it will be a wonderful addition to the old station area. Thanks for the opportunity to participate." Tom Green.
Tom has been a member of the community advisory group for the last year and a half. So he was involved in the initial visioning and moving forward. So
yeah.
he's seen the as that's progressed.
That's good. Good feedback. Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you, John. And thanks for coming. It's not often we get visitors to our meetings anymore. It's always kind of refreshing to have people. Thank you.
I'm going to suggest that we take just a break for a few moments and give the commissioners an opportunity to meet our neighbors that came from the Playhouse. And then we would come back in here in, let's say, 3 minutes. 3 minutes, and then we'll come back into session, and we'll take a look at maybe accomplishing some of the afternoon's work. Okay. So we'll just take about a three-minute break right now. All right. So we're back. Once again, this is the Chelan County Public Utility Commission meeting, and it is 11:15. We're ahead of schedule, and so we're going to dive into some business session topics that we normally would take up after lunch. But, Mike, what can we do here?
We have a number of managers' items, and I'd like to propose that we go ahead and start with them and get as many of them through before lunch as we possibly can.
Okay.
We have a number of topic team updates, so I'm going to start with Justin Erickson and Felicity Saberhagen. Justin will give us a general update on strategic planning, and then both he and Felicity have some specific topic team updates.
Good morning, Commissioners. Justin Erickson, Managing Director of District Services.
And Felicity Saberhagen, Business Advisor.
I'll start this morning with a general overview, as Mike mentioned. So we've had, since your last meeting, we've had a number of topic teams that have met, and so we'll be providing you those updates this morning as well. So on March 28th, Public Power Benefit, Long-Term Rate Planning, and the Rock Island Relicensing Team met. And over the next couple of weeks, we have additional meetings, including the Growth and Economic Development and Wholesale Retail Team. They are meeting April 4th. And on April 11th, Long-Term Rate Planning are holding their next meeting. Some of the early themes that we've seen so far, and Felicity and I will talk more about this as we get into our specific team updates, but there's been some consistency with some of the team work, especially Public Power Benefit and Rock Island Relicensing Team, specifically related to the project evaluation criteria. So that's been interesting to see two autonomous groups come out with criteria that are relatively similar. There's also been a strong recognition of other planning work that's happened since the last strategic plan was adopted. So just in the last 4 or 5 years, we've had efforts like the Our Valley, Our Future, updates to the county shoreline master plan, and other municipal plans that have been adopted. So that's been, I think, great to see and speaks to the ability to collaborate and for our work to further be a catalyst to support the synergy that we're seeing in the Valley. And on that note, there's also been a fair amount of discussions on partnerships and just ways that we can continue to partner with organizations, governmental entities, and nonprofits. And it's been exciting to see an overwhelmingly positive view of our outreach efforts. And so you just had an update on the outreach effort with facilities. And I think what the community has seen across the board is just a lot of outreach since the last strategic plan. And so it's been a lot of positive comments relative to that. So upcoming, in addition to the topic team meetings, we have, we're currently devising the customer owner survey and educational piece. We've kind of titled that the owner's manual, which is the term that we used during the last process. We'll be providing you a more detailed preview of this document and of the survey questions at your board meeting on April 29th. We'll also receive survey results from the residential customer survey that was focused on aesthetics and economic development. Getting those results in preliminarily this week, And so staff will be taking a look at that, and we'll be presenting those to you at a future meeting as well. Any questions on kind of the overall process before I dive in deeper on, into topic teams? All right, thank you. Well, the Rock Island Relicensing and Early Action Topic Team met last week. We had 13 members of the public present, so it was a pretty diverse group. We had individuals there from Chelan County, Chelan Douglas Land Trust, the Audubon Society, the City of Rock Island, the Malaga Community Council, the Trust for Public Land, and the Washington State Parks. We reviewed and refined our work products, which included a pro and con list to pursuing early actions. We looked at our evaluation criteria that I mentioned at your March 18th meeting and refined those a little bit further, didn't make any really substantive changes. We also looked at the preliminary project list, since we did have some people in the room that weren't with us at our previous topic team meeting, and so we just kind of wanted to vet that list one additional time. And there was general consistency with the work that had been done before. So we concluded the meeting by reminding the group about the overall project strategic planning time frame. We also honed in on the opportunity in May with this all customer owner survey to test some of the concepts and some of the discussion points that we had with the larger community. And so there was also kind of agreement with that approach and an understanding of what we hope to accomplish as we kind of drew the process to a conclusion, started to draw the process towards a conclusion. So our team now has agreed to take a pause, let us go through the customer owner survey process in May, and then they did desire to meet one additional time in June to view the results of the broader outreach and to finalize their topic team summary report. So that's where we're at with early action. I did also want to provide you a brief update on the growth in economic development and wholesale retail sale topic team. Greg Carrington is out today, so I will be providing that on his behalf. The timing of this topic team, so they're actually meeting for the first time this week, the first time since the February 7th kickoff meeting. And you might recall that the timing of that was adjusted because of the survey that the customer survey that was conducted that I mentioned earlier. And so they wanted to wait until those preliminary results were prepared before they met. So they'll be meeting this Thursday. The outreach utilized an existing working group that has been in place, but they also wanted to be cognizant of the fact that there would be people at the kickoff event on February 7th that may also have an interest in participating in this topic, and so, or those two topics. And so they did add a number of community members to the team in addition to the working group. So their agenda for this Thursday includes reviewing notes from the initial kickoff, having the team members actually take the same survey that went out to select members of the community. And we actually have the ability through some of our equipment to take that survey live and anonymously. So the group will be taking that and then testing their results against the community results, which will be interesting because the people in that room will have a different perspective and probably a perspective that's more focused on economic development. So that will be an interesting way of comparing and contrasting the two. And then they'll be educating the team on the interaction of retail and wholesale sales and showing the two on the available subsidy and concluding with discussion. So they'll be holding a follow-up meeting April 18th. And I suspect Greg will be up here in 2 weeks providing you a post-meeting update at your April 15th meeting. Any questions on those two topic teams? Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm here to give you an update on the Public Power Benefit Topic Team. We held our last meeting on March 28th, last Thursday. We had 8 representatives from the public. I included members from Wenatchee, Leavenworth, Malaga, Chelan County, a representative from the Wenatchee Valley Museum, and I think just a couple of other community members that didn't really self-identify with anything. So the meeting focused on really understanding the themes that we were exploring from the first two meetings. As Justin mentioned, we're seeing a lot of similarities between what we're experiencing with the themes. Also, they're experiencing with the Rock Island Group, which I think is great, just because it does really help really understand where our community is coming from and what their values are. The four themes that we talked about specifically in this meeting were access to the water, enhancing multicultural aspects of our community, including history of our community as well as diversity, considering partnerships, meaning that the PUD didn't have to do it all, that we should be partnering with other entities to help get work done, especially where we don't have express or implied authority. And the last one, of course, would be environmental stewardship. So we tried to explore maybe what they felt the attributes were associated with that, and many of them were able to give us a lot of examples. So in follow-up, what we'll be doing is putting some meat around what we think those are in terms of how we would want to evaluate that through a criteria and sending that back out to make sure that we've adequately captured the information from those that attended. Kind of an overarching theme, too, and I don't want to forget this, because really what they focused on was everything should relate back to education or economic development in our community. So all of the projects they felt should organically contribute to both of those. It wasn't something we would specifically go out and do, as we don't have express or implied authority to really help either of those along directly. One of the other things, too, that was a real aha for our community was how much work we already do in, for example, in the education realm. I think, you know, we've done a great job. We communicated out on an individual basis, but looking at what we do just in terms of the whole volume of it, we may, you know, so as a community member, I may catch the newspaper and see maybe a third of what we do. And all of them were impressed and very grateful for the work we have done. I wanted to hand out, I think it was, you guys may have received it, but this is what I'm talking about in terms of the education one. So I'm going to pass around a handout we gave to the group, and we helped basically summarize it. It's a presentation that Lorna Komlansky had done in terms of the job readiness and education public power benefit basically just the overarching job readiness that we have done throughout the year. So just wanted to make sure that you all understood that they were really grateful for it and didn't understand how much we had actually been doing, especially even they were more impressed when they really started to understand what our limitations were. If you start off at the beginning of it and look at the list of things that we're barred from being able to do, including, you know, basic education funding, compensated staff time, for education for school districts, any capital projects related to schools. We still had a tremendous amount of education opportunities that we were able to provide, even though we had significant limitations on what we could do. So our next steps, we are not meeting again, and we will be consolidating the information, touching base with our topic team to make sure that it is appropriate and reflects the information that they were expecting, and bringing that back to the commission when that is complete. Any of you have any questions?
Commissioners, comments, questions? I have to tell you that I am amazed and still continue to be amazed at the number of things that the PUD does in terms of community outreach and community involvement. And we have some really, and I've said this many times before, we have some really smart people here at the PUD that are able to stay within our legislative boundaries, but yet still provide great value to the community. So thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. I have to reiterate that the community members that were there were also, similar to you, just astounded by what we are able to do with the limitations that we do have.
Yes. Well, good job.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Topic team update is Kelly Boyd.
Good morning. I'm Kelly Boyd, Chief Financial and Risk Officer, and I am representing both myself and John Stoll, who is doing a presentation today on our cryptocurrency experience at a conference, and so wasn't able to attend here, but good timing with our a significant date of lifting the timing for new applications. So the long-term rate planning topic team met for the first time last week. We had 8 participants in attendance, and 3 were absent. So we have a total of 11 kind of confirmed participants. The 3 who were absent, I do anticipate being able to attend the next one. So we're looking forward to all of that participation. We had 6 staff and a note taker for a total of 7 PUD staff there to add each area of expertise. We really focused on electric for this session. So talked a lot about kind of building the education of the group around electric, long-term rate planning, what the look back, what the look forward has been, what the changing face of the customer base in Chelan County is, and industry trends then that relate to as your customers change, the industry and rate structures around that change also. And a outshoot out of the talking about industry trends around rate design, we talked about a few areas specifically like electric vehicles and electric vehicle charging stations. And then also for residential rates, the change in balance between a customer base charge and an energy usage charge. And the industry trend is to rebalance between those two elements of a rate design. Well, considering that trend of changing the customer base charge to be a larger percentage of the bill, that then in turn goes into the discussion about what are the impacts of doing that on a low-income customer base. And I would say that that discussion around low-income impacts and low-income programs and activities was where we had the most active conversation in our group. Rate discussions aren't as much fun, but it really was a great conversation around even just that studies around the impacts of changing a customer rate. They are not really finding a lot of correlation between energy usage and income levels. And so while one might think there is a relationship there, when you factor in things like low-income housing may tend to be less energy efficient, appliances less energy efficient, less insulation, that type of thing, that low usage doesn't correlate to low income. So energy patterns are very similar to the overall customer base. So it makes it even harder to appropriately respond to those types of concerns. I think one of the most interesting pieces of our conversation, though, was around the concept of, well, rather than focusing on a way to supplement a bill, perhaps the real focus should be on helping to reduce energy usage. So bills are just smaller because there's less energy being used. So really focus in on conservation programs proper, or don't leave things plugged in when you're gone, good ways to just reduce consumption. And so you get the benefit of a lower bill and just of better conservation measures. So there was a lot of discussion around that. I think we had the most ideas about ways to go about thinking about that type of potential impact. So for our next focus, since we focused mostly on electric in this session, we'll focus on water, wastewater, and fiber rate planning, as well as some of the results from the other groups and surveys, the groups like aesthetics. There's the survey that's out of what is the different perspectives about should that be paid for by the impacted areas or across all groups, so through rates. So you can see how that interrelates to our long-term rate planning group, as well as kind of the economic development concepts about really what should be spread across all customer classes and what should be more targeted. So because of all of that in a relationship, we'll spend some time on that also. And on our water, wastewater, and fiber rate planning, really plan on revisiting the conclusions from the last strategic plan and testing those out and see the current feeling of the community around water, wastewater, and fiber altogether of they're really identified as a valued service in the last strategic plan with a willingness to support those services in means to maybe help with capital expenditures and that type of things through means other than the rates of those systems. So we're going to do a check-in on that in the next session and see what the perspectives of our group are around that to bring that up to date. And then we'll finish with one more session after that one to kind of bring all the perspectives and concerns all together to report out, make a report to report out to the commission by the end of April.
Okay.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kelly.
I'm going to ask Suzanne Hartman and Susan Gillen. Suzanne loves to come and present good news, and she has some good news regarding some Public Relations Society of America awards.
Yes, but first, this is no April Fool's jokes. The Mariners are 5-1. How about that?
All right.
3-1 against Boston.
Former World Series champs.
Yeah, yeah. So, Susan?
Yes. So, your bag's bigger than mine,
though. I know. Well, only by one. I'll let you go first.
You want me to talk first?
Yeah.
Okay. So Suzanne and I just came back from a banquet in Seattle at the Public Relations Society of America Puget Sound chapter. Suzanne has been involved there as an officer and hard worker for many years. And when she arrived here a few years ago, she kept encouraging me to apply for the awards that they give out for outstanding communications. And for several years now, Suzanne and I have been able to go to the banquet this year together, sitting at the same table. And we were astounded to see 5 awards come to Chelan PUD. My 2 are for conservation campaigns, and Suzanne's, of course, are for the work that she's done with communications. So when you're done, I want to say some thank yous and pretend like it's the Grammys.
Okay. Good. Okay. Well, not only are they 5 awards, but they're the top awards that could be given out for the campaigns. And I think it's safe to say that our little Chelan PUD managed to capture the 5 top awards in each of the categories we entered. So we received awards for everything we entered. These 3 are for the cryptocurrency campaign. One is for the video and social media that we did. Another was for the article that appeared in the Western Energy Institute's magazine that had John and Steve on the cover of it, which is always still going to be one of my favorite pictures. And the 3rd is was for the campaign altogether, bringing it together, the importance of having a reasoned and reasonable approach to cryptocurrency miners and how that affected the PUD and the importance to our customer owners. So I would say that we kind of scooped the group. some maybe earned more awards, but we earned the best. So
back to the Grammys. I wanted to make sure I mentioned the people who support me because they're everywhere. Suzanne is one of them, encouraging me every year to do this. They judge you not just on the cleverness of your entry, but also on the metrics and the proven performance. And so that's something that we have to do year-round in order to make sure that we excel. My supervisor, Andrew Grissell, is phenomenal. Back in 2014, I said, how about doing something a little quirky and entertaining in a video? And he said, okay, let's try it. And it's come to be kind of a district fallback. It's something we do a lot, and it's popular and it's successful. I'd also like to thank the communications group because I run my ideas by them, and they applaud me when I do well, and then they also like my good friend Kim reels me back in when I've gone too far. So I appreciate everyone's help. And, of course, North 40 Productions, which is our local crew. I think many of you have gotten to know them, and we're really lucky to have them here. So that's my
definitely help. A team effort and fun when you win.
And go to our YouTube channel, and you can see all of these. The award-winning video for conservation is called Save Your Energy for the Things That Really Matter. There's one on smart thermostats, and it was shot downstairs here in our customer relations group. You'll see employees that you know. They had a great time making the video. And then we follow up on that this year with the help of local businesses, which is awesome as well. Home Depot, Stands has been super. They love to have us down there. They've been great partners. They let us rearrange their entire lighting aisle so that we could do a video this year on lighting. So check them out. They're fun. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, did we get it?
Do you have time? Real quick?
Yes.
Okay, go for it.
Okay, they're on
Explore.
There we go. Go for it.
Phil Johnson and family, pack your bags. You're going to Disneyland.
Touchdown!
Oh, sorry. I wanted
to. Save your energy for the things that really matter, like controlling the temperature inside your home from anywhere. Take advantage of rebates on energy-saving smart thermostats. Learn more at conservationmakessense.org.
So local actors. And let's see. If we go to the other one, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is the new one.
Yeah. Are you in this one?
I'm in one.
Is that you with your...
One. Not that, this one's pretty hilarious.
This is at Stan's.
Is that risk?
I've been there. Lost. Wasting your energy on the not knowing when to save and when not to save. Do yourself a favor and save your energy for the things that really matter.
But I was...
Go forth and save.
Check out PUD discounts on energy-efficient light bulbs. Visit conservationmakessense.org to learn more.
I've been there.
So you're in the one in front of the water heater.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes we get to have fun, too.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh. Oh, this one.
I don't know what this is. Get out of there. There we go.
That's not one of ours.
No, definitely not.
Congratulations.
Yes, yeah.
You know, getting up and going to work ought to be pretty fun.
Yeah.
I think you've kind of got that down. Yeah. Appreciate it very much.
Yeah. Enjoy.
Okay. Good work. Yeah. Great job on the awards.
Yes.
Thanks.
Tika Sellers is going to give us an update on the property signage.
All right. Good morning, Commissioners. Tika Sellers, Customer Outreach Specialist with Customer Utilities. So right now we have a sign on our Castle Rock property. It's a bit outdated, maybe. And we've also got other properties now that we need to get some substation, or we need to get some signage on. So Bavarian Substation, North Shore Chelan, Antiat, hopefully soon, sometime this year, something near the Chelan Dam area. And we thought it would be better to go with a generic sign that wasn't specific to a location so that we could just order a bunch of them and have them available. So this is what we've come up with, something that is a little bit more modern looking, as well as letting our customers know that what's going to go in that location is a benefit to our community and will support growth and development into the future. So size is 3x3. The actual sign will be 4x4. And our lands department is going to install those for us. And I'm ready to get them ordered as soon as I get an okay from everyone. So I wanted to make sure I got a nod from the communications department. Kim did give me a little bit of input on this. And also wanted you guys to take a look before we get them ordered. So any thoughts, questions?
You're looking for an okay?
Well, sure if you have any input or if you think that our message is right. Yeah, there you go.
I like the word okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's really clean, nice.
Good.
Direct.
Sounds
appropriate.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Any other questions while I'm up here?
I think it's, I'm just going to chime in and say I think it's great that we are going to be so forward-thinking that we give our ratepayers notice that this land owned by the PUD with some development in mind that forewarns anyone who might want to build or locate in that area that, that very potentially there's something going to be built here by the utility.
Right. Well, yeah, and some of that came out of the substations lessons learned too, right? I think we changed our strategy pretty quickly after we had gone through the Chelan and Leavenworth process. So these new signs are part of that effort. So
that's great.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Okay. Yep. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Tika.
Yeah.
Justin Erickson will give us an update on the Sage Hills Trail.
Good morning again. I will update you on our Homewater Preserve property and the Sage Hills Trail. By way of background, in 1989, the 960-acre Homewater Preserve was dedicated as a wildlife preserve as part of our Rock Island license. In 2007, Chelan PUD issued the City of Wenatchee a conditional use permit for a single trail that traverses the property. There are unofficial trails through that property, but there is only one official permitted trail through that property. And that engagement with the city is largely administered by our partnership with the Chelan Douglas Land Trust. As a condition of that permit for the trail, the Department of Fish and Wildlife did request that that preserve be closed during winter, during the winter season, to reduce impacts to wintering mule deer. And so we do traditionally do that closure from December 1st through March 31st. I think this year it was delayed a couple of days because of conditions to get one more weekend out for recreational use. And this year we've had to extend that. So the Land Trust voluntarily closes their trails and trailheads between Number One Canyon and Horse Lake Road each year to help support this effort and minimize impacts. Our closure, as I mentioned, is normally lifted by March 31st, however, can be extended based on conditions. The significant snowfall in February drove the deer from the foothills and to a lower elevation. And Chelan PUD and the Land Trust began considering an extended closure due to this persistent snow cover and the delayed greenup. This approach was, we did confer with our partners, including Fish and Wildlife, who supported this approach. It is based on the recent weather pattern. It is expected that by the end of this week, there will be sufficient open habitats and emerging vegetation that we can safely open that property and provide for recreational access. So we have published a expected opening date of this Friday, April 5th. The Horse Lake Reserve Trails and Horse Lake Trailhead may be closed beyond April 5th, and that's a decision for the Land Trust and for the county to make. At that higher elevation, the snow and the moisture is holding on a bit longer, and so there may be some rolling opening of other trailheads in the community, with the full trail system anticipated opening date of Saturday, April 27th. Did want to provide that update to you. I think it also highlights a theme that you've seen a lot today in terms of partnerships and our collaborative efforts. And so just through this property, we have partnerships with the City of Wenatchee, the Chelan Douglas Land Trust, Fish and Wildlife, and Chelan County. You're seeing a whole host of partners that are trying to do the best for the community, the best for recreation, and the best for our habitat conservation responsibilities. Any questions?
Great job. I like the transparency, the communication, the collaboration.
Yep.
It's works really well.
Okay. See you on this trail on Friday.
You bet. See you there.
Thank you. We do have one more manager's item. They will not be here till after lunch. So I would suggest that we go ahead and hit item number 12, the commission travel before lunch.
Okay. All right. Lisa, you ready?
I'm ready.
All right.
So we have travel coming up in April for WAPUTA meetings. Have everyone attending except Commissioner Arsenault?
Correct.
I need registrations back from a few of you.
Lisa, let's hold up on mine.
Hold up.
Yeah.
I'll make a note. Okay, we have in May NWPPA. I have a few registrations I need to get in, but I think we're pretty doing pretty well.
Are those online, or do we have those? Or?
I have a copy I can get you today. Basically, I just need to know if you want to do the pre-conference seminars, but I'll get that to you at lunch. And in June, we have the APPA National Conference. Commissioner Bowles, McKenna, and Smith attending. Is that good?
At this point.
Okay. And I have Commissioner Congdon going to the Water Committee meeting in June. Commissioner Smith has LEHI, Richland, policymakers in July. Commissioner Smith and Arsenault. And September, I think we noted Commissioners Smith and Arsenault were interested in this OPUDA. I'm not sure what it is.
Yes.
You are? Okay. And association meetings in September, I think, are in Leavenworth. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So I didn't make any hotel reservations.
No.
Okay. Another water workshop in September. Does anyone besides Commissioner Congdon do those?
Not me. No.
Okay. October WAPUTA meeting.
I may go to that. I will have to let you know later, maybe at our next meeting.
Okay.
Yeah, at the water meeting in September, sometimes the president is asked to do a welcoming, and those kinds of things, so I don't know what John counts.
Okay.
May have, but
thank you.
Yeah, because it's local.
Thank you for the heads
up. You're welcome.
Oh, so you may be asked to go. Is that what we're saying?
Yeah. You know, not as necessarily as a participant, but as a welcomer. And
oh, okay.
Greeter.
Okay.
And we love having people come.
But you can put me down for maybe on that one.
You have to put the lederhosen on. And
yeah.
I may have to borrow some.
Yeah. Vern Chamberlain has some.
Well, there's a picture.
I've seen it.
Yeah, I bet.
It's not pretty.
Not pretty.
Okay, then we have Commissioner Smith traveling second part of LEHI in October. We have November WAPUTA in Olympia and the annual conference, WAPUTA annual conference in December.
Where is that this year? Does anybody know?
I'm not sure.
I think it's to be determined yet. I'm not sure.
Oh, to be determined yet.
Yeah.
Read the note there.
Generally, what they'll do is they do east-west. So last year was west, so my guess is maybe somewhere east this year. But I,
yeah.
Typically.
And nobody east wants to go west. And nobody west wants to go
east. Wants to go east in December.
Time.
And if there's anything on here that you know and I don't, or something's been updated and it's not reflected here, please let me know. I don't always see everything. I don't have always have all the most current information, so I'm always open to any information you have.
So, Lisa, I want to draw your attention to something and perhaps get some opinions from my fellow commissioners. Steve sent out an email that was an invitation by United States Energy Association, USEA. SLAM PUD has been selected to receive an award for their efforts in volunteering to work with the Uganda Power Agency. The award is rather prestigious, and it will be delivered in Washington, D.C. on May 23rd. So far, it appears that Steve has two staff members selected already, John Yale and Janelle Urich, as staff representatives to go back to D.C. He has suggested that possibly one or two commissioners also attend on May 23rd. So, Lisa, you may put that on your calendar and add it, and then you might chew on whether anyone has an interest in going back to D.C.
Would Randy be going? I mean, he was part of...
I think Randy would definitely be going. I haven't spoken with Randy, but I'd be surprised if he didn't want to go. That would leave room for one additional commissioner who might want to be interested.
So, as president, are you...
I certainly would go if no one else was interested.
I think it's appropriate that the president represent the organization as well as a member who's been actively involved. Would just be kind of my perspective.
All right. So you might put that on your calendar, and I'll print off a copy of the letter so you have it for your file.
So it looks like you'd go from California, Sacramento, straight to D.C.
Straight to D.C., because that would be the day after the conference. Mm-hmm. Doesn't make sense to come back to Seattle or Wenatchee.
Right. Okay. I'll add this.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. And I'm out of things for the morning session.
Well, okay. So why don't we adjourn, call it an early lunch, and meet back here at 1 o'clock for this afternoon session.
You're a taskmaster. Hey. If you think 3 minutes is early.
I know.
I'm thinking.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the April 1st, 2019 business session of the Chelan County Public Utility District Commission meeting. I'd like to remind anyone that might have an electronic device to please take this opportunity to silence that device. Welcome any and all guests who are in the audience today. We ask that if you have any comments to make, please step to the microphone, state your name and address for the record, and limit your comments to 3 minutes. So we were able to accomplish a great deal this morning and covered a lot of ground. Where we are at this moment is the consent agenda. Well, commissioners, we have a consent agenda in front of us. Is there a motion to accept the consent agenda?
So moved.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. Do we have any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. That's unanimous, and so the motion is carried. Okay. So, Mike, would you like to present the regular agenda?
Absolutely. Item number 8 on the regular agenda is a resolution authorizing amendment number 5, the services agreement, SATA number 16-010, with ClearSalt Consulting to provide commercial energy efficiency services. And Andrew Grissell.
And I'll introduce us. Good afternoon, commissioners. My name is Andrew Grissell. I manage our Customer Energy Solutions Group, and with me is Scott Stanford. He oversees our commercial energy efficiency programs, and so we're here to request an increase in funding for our ClearResult contract number 16010. This contract has been successful, and it supports our commercial energy efficiency programs. It's been effective for our customers, helping them to save energy, helping their operational enhanced operational environment, as well as being very cost-effective. As you can see from these photos, this one is from the rack, before and after, half the energy usage, and way better lighting. So, cost-effective or energy efficiency, better operating environment. This is Plaza Superjet, and they've been a great customer of ours. They've done a lot of programs with us, and this is their, you know, enhanced lighting case, and it just shows off their products better. And so since 2015, Clear Result has helped us to acquire 0.75 average megawatts for $18 to $19 megawatt hour. This is below market. It helps both the customers who participate in the program as well as our customers at large. It's also opened the doors to large national chains that we have not been able to do without them. They've helped us to do efficiency savings at Walmart, at Home Depot, I think at Safeway.
Safeway.
And so these are areas we normally would not be able to get into, and so we're very happy about that. And so based on these results and what we see as future work for 2019, we would like to increase the contract by $100,000 to a not-to-exceed amount of $595,000. This will help us to continue providing our commercial customers with efficient products, efficient operating systems, and will help us with our energy savings goals as well. So, any questions?
Is the conservation just strictly lighting?
No. The grocery, the Plaza Superjet on the right, has got a. There's various refrigeration majors. There's specific for grocery stores,
Those are drives, refrigeration.
Yeah, drives on motors, compressors, refrigeration stuff.
Yep.
Anti-sweat controls keep the closed cases from condensing, and lighting. Yeah, and a lot of what we do is lighting. You know, we're seeing a lot of. They went from T12s down to T8s. Now we're going back, and we're going to even lower down into LEDs. And so, a lot of what we do is lighting. Mm-hmm. Lots and lots of what we do is lighting.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Thanks. Commissioners, any other questions?
Just the, the photo of the tennis club at the end of the rack in terms of the energy savings, but also the benefit of the lighting on the court. So you can tell who was president when the first one was done and who's probably the now.
Yes, and that's a big part of it. It's not just the energy savings, but especially for our commercial customers who rely on these, who rely on a really nice environment for their customers. It helps them in that manner as well.
Yeah, no, that's just outstanding.
Yeah.
I mean, look at the evenness of the light on the court.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
It's really, that's top notch.
Yeah.
And does Clear Result, do they make their contact with, say, Walmart or Plaza Superjet, or is that their role as the consultant?
Yeah, they have a field guy that's here that works with me that is out visiting those stores every month, twice a month, checking in on them, building relationships with them, and us, and he follows up on some of that local stuff. They have a national key accounts team that's really where we see that. That we don't really get to. You go to the Safeway manager, he's just a local manager, he's not making the decisions that are happening in California for Safeway at, nationwide. But Clear Results at that table.
I see.
And so they're able to catch on when that's happening or kind of say, hey, Chelan PD's got some things up in the Northwest. You should think about that. So that's really helped us gather that stuff up that we really wouldn't maybe get a chance to get. So they've been pretty valuable in the key accounts area as well for us.
Okay, great, good.
Yeah, this has been real successful. Like it.
Thank you.
Yeah, it really has. Yeah. Great. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So that is your one and only resolution.
Okay.
Now, Mr. Chairman, I approve. I move that we approve Resolution 8 as presented.
Second. It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
It's unanimous, so it carries.
Good. We do have one manager's item left.
Okay.
Jennifer Pickle and Michelle Dennis are going to provide an overview of the fiber marketing campaign launch.
It's
so I won't say that we saved the best for the last. But
gonna love the boss.
We all know we did.
That's right.
I didn't see Jennifer hiding out behind me.
Yeah. Well, I accused him of being punished and put in the corner, but Jennifer knows me.
So while she's getting that up, I'll kind of set the stage for this. For quite a while now, we've wanted to lay out a marketing campaign for the fiber program. Both as a educational type campaign, the customer owners more aware of both the program and what the program's capable of doing for them. It's taken a lot of work to get to this point. We always have that difficult circumstance of we're a wholesale provider and we need to promote our network, but also to make sure that the customers know that, that ultimately they sign up with one of the retail service providers. In doing this particular campaign, we've worked with communications with an outside consultant, and we wanted to do something fresh, modern, and kind of snappy, and I think we achieved that. This initial campaign will run from April today, April 1st, through August. And then we're going to step back and reevaluate it, particularly look at the metrics, look at what it's done for us, what are the benefits, and how do we go forward from there? What do we need to modify to make it better? So with that.
Good afternoon, commissioners. I'm Jennifer Pickle, business advisor for Fiber and Telecom, and with me is Michelle Dennis. She's the administrative assistant in our group. She comes to us actually with a background in strategic communications. So we've utilized her quite a bit on this, along with our consultant. You'll notice that the snappy new design that Mike was referring to, all those arrows point to our logo, and you'll see that theme going all the way through this. So like Mike referenced, our campaign did start today. I don't know if any of you heard radio ads or anything like that, but we are on Coho and the like. And our goals were a greater awareness of the fiber optic community, the fiber optic system we have in the community, educating our residents about the speed and the reliability of our internet, and encouraging the traffic to go to our website. So we did do a very simplified, modified website now. And our theme is life at the speed of fiber. So that you'll see that in all of the advertisements and everything that we'll see going forward. So this is the base of our messaging, the life at the speed of fiber. You'll see some of the connections at the speed of fiber, business, family, and entertainment. Those are the big things that you really need high speed, fast, reliable service for. And this is what's appearing in our print ads right now. In the Wenatchee world, we have that. So you see business, fiber, and connections, and the note to get connected at chelanpud.org. Our digital ads, so this is running on Facebook and the Wenatchee World website. See, there's banners that go across, and the same theme that's going throughout. And billboards, so this is kind of the exciting thing that we haven't done. So we'll see if it works. See one of them at 200 South Mission, so at the end of Wenatchee, South Wenatchee here, entertainment at the speed of fiber. 306 Wenatchee Avenue, which is closer to here. You'll see connections at the speed of fiber. And Highway 97A, so around Stamilt, Highest fiber area. Highway 97A has a speed limit and our fiber internet doesn't.
That's a snappy.
Catchy, isn't it?
That's clever. Yeah,
that's my favorite.
I would agree.
We also did radio ads, so we're doing them on Cozy, Coho, KPQ, ESPN, and Z Country. And we'll play them. Or are you here?
I just got connected to Chelan County's fiber optic internet, and life at the speed of fiber is amazingly fast. It's like a cheetah. No, a cheetah with a rocket boost.
Aerodynamic suit. It's like light-speed, laser-quick, supersonic, fast internet. Like one of those race cars with the big wheels and no fenders. Or, you know, those bullet trains that are all like whoosh when they go by? Like that. It's like my internet's been shot out of a cannon. My movies don't lag, my video chats are crystal clear, and my customers never have to wait at the register.
Enjoy life at the speed of fiber. Head to ChelanPUD.org and get connected.
I just got connected to Chelan County's fiber optic internet. And
So here's our Facebook ad.
I just got connected to Chelan County's fiber optic internet, and life at the speed of fiber is amazingly fast. It's like a cheetah. No, a cheetah with a rocket boosters and some sort of aerodynamic suit. It's like light-speed, laser-quick, supersonic fast internet. Like one of those race cars with the big wheels and no fenders. Or, you know, those bullet trains that are all like whoosh when they go by? Like that. It's like my internet's been shot out of a cannon. My movies don't lag, my video chats are crystal clear, and my customers never have to wait at the register.
Enjoy life at the speed of fiber. Head to ChelanPUD.org and get connected.
Here's the other radio ad. Sorry about that.
You know when you're trying to stream a movie, it just keeps buffering?
Not really.
Seriously?
I have super fast fiber optic internet from Chelan County PUD.
And isn't it annoying when your video conferencing is all blurry and choppy?
But I have fiber, so...
What about when your connection goes out right when you need to upload a big file?
Never happens to me. I have fiber. I telecommute, and I never have to worry about losing service or being out of touch with the office because
I get it. Because you have fiber.
Enjoy life at the speed of fiber. Head to ChelanPUD.org and get connected.
So this one is appearing on our webpage. This is the instructional video for people to get connected, and it introduces our service providers into them.
Here in Chelan County, we have world-class, ultra-fast fiber-optic internet. That means you can enjoy life at the speed of fiber. Here's how to get connected. First, head to chelanpud.org/fiber. You'll enter your address to make sure fiber-optic service reaches your home. Next, click on the list of internet service providers to see who you can purchase service from. They'll tell you about pricing and all the details of their service. Pick the one that best fits your needs. The internet service provider will also connect your fiber optic internet at your home or business. Soon, you'll be enjoying life at the speed of fiber. That means no buffering, reliable telecommuting, and small businesses don't have to worry about the speed of their technology. Get connected now at chelanpud.org/fiber.
So that's it. We did meet with the service providers to go over this and let them know what was going on, and it was received very favorably by them. So they're pretty excited to have it come out. And like Mike mentioned, we will be doing metrics to see how effective this is.
Mm-hmm.
Over measure this over our incremental growth rates and of our current trends, so be able to see if it works.
I think the goals that you spoke to in the initial part have been achieved. Joycelyn and I sometimes are watching commercials on TV and saying they actually ran that past a board of directors and thought it was a good idea, you know. And so watching these, I think it's a good idea, Mike. And thanks to everybody for being involved and your creativity that's there. And I mean, it's clean, it's neat, it's snappy to the point. I just like it. So, yeah, I wouldn't have to criticize our own ads. I love it.
Thank you.
Yeah, I particularly like the logo where you had the horse come up out of the water.
Cute.
I like that. That was really very snappy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just some good really job. Good things.
Yeah. Good work.
Yeah.
So I will say we're very proud of it at this moment.
Yeah.
The results always will speak for themselves.
Certainly.
We will measure that carefully and see where we take it to in the future. But it is a very proven thing that us advertising and marketing our own network, even though we have that wholesale retail split, is very, very effective. Mm-hmm. And we saw that from Grant's marketing campaign. We would expect to see similar results here.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Thanks for the presentation. Nice job. Hope to see you back up here soon.
Yeah.
Okay, well, next on the agenda, that's it for manager items?
That is it.
Okay, next on the agenda is commissioner items. Commissioners, any topics, any items to discuss?
No, I have none.
How about follow-up on delegation of action items?
We have one item from the last board meeting, which was for me to share the public power benefit topic team presentation and minutes notes, and I did that by email. Mm-hmm. A little over a week ago, so that one is taken care of.
Okay. And delegation of action items for today?
The only thing I had was to get the registration to Commissioner McKenna, which I did at lunch.
Okay.
And that was the only action item I had recorded. So.
Well, I look around. We have no public for comment. Matters of general business as may be necessary before the commission. Hearing none, and we will have no executive session today. So, based on that, I think we are adjourned.